Assalamu alaikum, greetings of peace. I'm excited to bring you another exciting episode of The Dean Show with another exciting guest. Now, Islamophobes have no compunction hiding under the pretense of free speech, which is actually hate speech, while going on a bigoted, hate-fueled witch hunt against Muslims and Islam. While my next guest, get this, my next guest was fired from his university job as a professor for critical thinking and asking some of the six why questions. And what are those six why questions? We'll be discussing and asking those same questions with you today, and let you be the judge. And we'll also be trying to get to the bottom of why did Alex Jones take a turn and all of a sudden start attacking Islam. All this and more with my next guest, Dr. Kevin, when we come back. Assalamu alaikum. We got a very special guest in the studio here. I'm excited to bring on the show. We're going to be talking about some really interesting things here with Dr. Kevin. How are you, sir?
Hey, it's good to be with you, Eddie.
Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful to be on your show. I've seen your show for years going back, and it's great what you're doing.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Can you tell us how did you get into, you've written a lot of books. You've gotten into an area that many people would think is, you know, there's labels. People call people conspiracy theorists, you know, that make them look like they're crazy, whatever the case. Anyone who questions anything of an official story, it's like, okay, whatever the media puts out there, you got to swallow, what is that, hook, bait, and sinker, right? Yeah. And anyone questions anything. But your question, you went down some rabbit holes.
I'm going down all the rabbit holes.
Yeah.
It took me a while.
Yeah.
You know, but I started going down rabbit holes when I was, 16, 17 years old and discovered that the JFK assassination was a coup d'etat in the United States. I realized that American democracy was not quite what we were being told it was. And that didn't completely change my life overnight. I still went through a normal kind of academic career track, looking to be at first an English teacher, French teacher, humanities teacher. And then I came to Islam in 1993 and decided to learn Arabic. So I got into my PhD program. Mm-hmm. And I was planning to be just kind of a normal professor. But after 9/11, a couple of years after 9/11, actually, at the end of 2003, I looked into 9/11 closer after hearing that David Ray Griffin was working on it and saying it was an inside job. And so I looked at that evidence and was convinced and realized that this was so important that it was worth pursuing. And so I've been jumping down all the rabbit holes ever since.
Why was it so important?
Well, this launched a new era, not only in American politics, but in the world politics as well. You know, we're now living through the so-called clash of civilizations, which is basically a war on Islam. And as Muslims, we know that we are obliged to stand up for what's right, you know, to enjoin the good and forbid the bad, to speak truth to power, to follow the example of Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him. He and his companions were in a much more difficult situation than we are today. They were under oppression by an oligarchy that was mistreating people. And that's the real example of Islam at the ethical level. And I felt obliged to follow that. I couldn't see myself spending 7 years on the career track, keeping my mouth shut about this. So I started speaking out, and all hell broke loose.
So you are a, what? How can you define your career at that time? How old were you at that time?
Oh, I would have been in my 40s, I guess.
So you were a university professor?
No, I just finished my PhD in 2004, actually. So yeah. It was just as I was finishing the PhD that I discovered this 9/11 evidence.
Yeah.
And it was bad timing, because normally you have to spend about 7 years pursuing tenure before you feel like you have any job security. But I couldn't see keeping my mouth shut for 7 years.
Yeah. So were these some of the, we're going, these are called like the six whys. We'll get right into that. And then we want to go into some history, because you're also a historian.
Well, I've become a sort of an amateur historian. My training is not so much in history. I've been trained in journalism, languages and literature, humanities and area studies, and to some extent religious studies. But all of that, of course, is all tied in with history. So I've been looking at what you might call hidden history the last decade or so.
Because many people are in the same, we're in the same position, because they know after, because Islam is the fastest growing way of life in the world, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. Many people, they connect with it. It makes sense. And they go down that spiritual rabbit hole, and they find out, wow, Islam answers all the questions to the purpose of life. Why am I here? Where am I going? Would I die? It's a peaceful way of life. It calls for, you know, so many great things. And to have it, you know, attributed to some, one of the worst things in American history, we take strong offense to that. So it, was that a catalyst where you took off to see, like, hold on, where could any person get, you know, the audacity to try to use Islam and to justify such an evil act?
Yeah, I guess I saw that what the authorities are saying about Islam and the reality of Islam is very, very different. And so that's, I guess, by coming to Islam and seeing that, that opened me up to going one step further and seeing, well, if they can lie about Islam, if they lie about JFK and these other events that I've learned about, it's possible they could be lying about 9/11. But honestly, for 2 years, I didn't realize that they could have done something that audacious. You know, I figured it was something relatively minor. Maybe they steered and infiltrated these hijackers or something. But the whole 9/11 story never really made sense to me. But I just didn't get into looking really closely at it for 2 years. And I feel really stupid about that. How could I have been sleepwalking for 2 years actually believing this official story? Most of my Muslim friends in Madison, Wisconsin didn't believe it from the get-go. I was the only one who said, well, let's wait and see how the evidence shakes out. But yeah, you're right that any of us who've actually looked into Islam and seen this completely different picture, the reality of Islam, which, as you say, it's the best preserved, authentic tradition of the divine revelations that have been sent down. It's well preserved, and it offers essentially perfect guidance. Anybody in the world who practices Islam can have their spiritual level uplifted. And seeing that it clears up the misconceptions of the earlier brands of monotheism by giving us the true oneness of God, by telling us that these are all messengers who've come and brought God's word to all these different people. And here's a way of life that's simple, straightforward, makes sense, has profound ethical implications, and essentially really straightens people out and straightens societies out to the extent that it's actually practiced. You know, all of that is so different from what we're fed in the media that, yeah, it's another rabbit hole as well.
Yeah. What do you think about this term when people, as soon as you question, we're going to get into some questions. They're just questions that should be addressed, I think. But when you're called, or have you ever been called a conspiracy theorist?
Have I ever not been called a conspiracy theorist? If I got paid $1 for every time I've been called a conspiracy theorist, I'd be a rich man.
Now, there are people who, you know, they come out with some crazy, you know, theories, conspiracy. I'm not one of them. But there's questions, and I'm going to get into some questions that are very important. But what do you think of the term when someone as soon as you ask a question, someone will label you a conspiracy theorist?
Well, that's a thought stopper. What they're saying is, we don't want to even think about what you're talking about. So here's a way to not think about it. And interestingly enough, this thought stopper was invented by the CIA. There was an actual CIA memo that was sent out to all of the CIA's assets in American journalism and world journalism in the mid-1960s. And it ordered their assets to start calling the people who were investigating the JFK assassination, quote-unquote, conspiracy theorists. That's where the term comes from. So the conspiracy theory about the term conspiracy theory is one of the many conspiracy theories that are actually true.
So if someone called you a conspiracy theorist, which they have, do you agree to that term? Or you say, no, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. What do you say?
I would say I'm a conspiracy realist. You know, mm-hmm. The most commonly prosecuted federal crime, Eddie, is conspiracy. The federal government admits that there are conspiracies all over the place, and they prosecute a few of them. So we all know that conspiracies exist. A conspiracy is simply more than one person who, you know, working to accomplish something that's illegal or unethical. Happens all the time. Look around, folks. So this the term conspiracy theorist really makes no sense at all. It was used with the JFK assassination to question those who denied that one guy, Lee Harvey Oswald, did it. It was more than one guy. Mm-hmm. But today it makes no sense. With 9/11, we all know more than one guy did it. The official conspiracy theory holds that it was 19 guys with box cutters led, not just guys, 19 pork chop loving, whiskey drinking, cocaine snorting, stripper dating, crazed, you know, cocaine freaks who patronized Jack Abramoff's casino boats and kept flying to Las Vegas for gambling junkets, but they were also radical Muslim fundamentalists. That's the official story. Those 19 guys, led by a man on kidney dialysis in a cave in Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden, somehow caused three buildings to vaporize at free fall acceleration using box cutters. That's the official conspiracy theory. It is a conspiracy theory. It posits a conspiracy of at least 20 people. And that conspiracy theory is one of the craziest conspiracy theories that's ever been promulgated.
Well, isn't there a new poll, or there are several polls that most Americans now, over 50%, some as high as 80, 85%, don't believe the official story?
Yeah, the polls are kind of all over the place depending on how you ask, but there's one very clear poll from 2006. It's a Scripps poll that found that 36% of Americans said it was likely that 9/11 was an inside job designed to trigger the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. So 36% of the American people, that's over 100 million people who say that. And there's another poll that shows that something, was it 84, 85% of the American people don't fully believe the government's version.
Yeah. You know Alex Jones?
Oh, yeah. Do I ever? I was in his studio once.
You were?
Yeah.
Why did he take a turn? You know, I wasn't a big fan of always watching him, but sometimes someone would send me something and I'd take a look and he'd bring up some interesting points. But recently, he started really going after Islam.
Yeah.
Why did he do that? Well, he took a total turn in another direction.
There are two theories about this, and I don't know which is right, or maybe neither, but the two I've heard. One is there's a whole school of thought that emphasizes that Alex Jones has always been kind of covering up for Israel. Now, let's face it, Eddie, I know this is very controversial and people are going to throw rotten fruit at us when we say this, but making Islam the great new civilizational enemy to replace communism really did benefit the state of Israel tremendously, because it united the whole West against the people who were the biggest problem for Israel, and it led to wars against the very countries that were giving Israel a hard time. So Alex was talking about 9/11 not being what we were told, but he has always steered the conversation away from discussing that aspect of the case. So there's some folks that think there's something funny going on there, and they point out that, you know, he has a lawyer who is the same lawyer as people in the Bronfman crime family, which is the Jewish Zionist crime family that dominates Canada. So that's one theory, and I don't know if that's true or not. Another, and I think possibly more plausible reason that Alex Jones would have gone down this crazy path of extreme Islamophobia, even though he knows 9/11 was an inside job, is that he makes more money that way. Because remember, he's looking for the biggest possible audience. He's selling snake oil, and he doesn't really want a smart, sophisticated audience. He wants a pretty dumb, gullible audience. So what's the best way to get a bunch of dumb, gullible people who don't really believe what they hear in the mainstream media to watch your show? Well, bash Islam, because there are a lot of people who are not, you know, that maybe they don't have the time, maybe they don't have the intellect, maybe they don't have whatever to really look into things, and they like to look at the screen and they like to get all excited and they don't quite believe the mainstream media. Those people are a wide open audience, and so somebody like Alex can build a huge audience of this bottom feeders, basically. Add them to the more sophisticated people who've been watching him, especially since back when he was doing reasonably good stuff, when he had Kurt Nimmo working with him. So anyway, he's gotten much, much worse. He's focusing on a much lower level audience, and it's really unfortunate because his operation has done some good stuff over the years, or it used to anyway.
So you've been on his show?
Oh yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you had have you tried to reach out to him ever since he went on this Islamophobia bashing? Have you tried to reach out?
I tried a few times. Actually, yeah. I tried many times. And there's actually a guy here in Chicago who kind of knows Alex, or was communicating with Alex a bit. And I tried to go through him. And then I tried to be, you know, when he ignored me, then I, you know, I started being a little more critical. And in the last couple of years, he's gotten so bad that I've given up trying to be nice to him. And I basically, you know, call it the way I see it.
Yeah. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back with more here with Dr. Kevin Barrett. Back here on the Dean Show, Dr. Kevin, thank you again for being with us. So we were talking about Alex Jones and how he kind of took off and, you know, joined the hate parade of instigating all this hate against Islam and Muslims. You're a Muslim yourself, and you know what it stands for, and it's totally the antithesis of, you know, what people are saying out there. And if somebody would be sincerely and genuinely looking into it, they would come to the same conclusion that we have. But many people, they just join that hate parade. It's like easier. And Alex, I'm really sad that he joined that, and he's instigating a lot of misinformation. And you've reached out to him. You've tried. Because I think that would be genuine on his part to bring a Muslim like yourself, bring someone. We've also, we made a program, me and a friend of mine, Dr. Sabil, and we actually invited him to invite the Muslims on. Come if you have some questions and some doubts about something, some misinformation, come bring us on. But we also hit a dead end.
Yeah, it's too bad. He's a Christian, or he identifies as a Christian, and his audience is mostly Christian. And 9/11 was largely designed to cause strife between Christians and Muslims, yeah, and to make both groups look bad,
yeah,
and to try to make the atheists look good. You know, suddenly we had all of these best-selling books of the new atheists because of 9/11. And really, Christians and Muslims should be working together, and really the good Christians and Muslims are working together now. But it's really sad when somebody with that huge audience of mostly Christians who don't really believe the official story of everything gets misled by Alex Jones. And, you know, there are some good conservative Christians who are reaching out to Islam and who are telling the truth about Islam. People like Mark Siljander. Have you ever had him on your show?
No.
I would highly recommend that. He's a former congressman, a very conservative Christian, former Islamophobe.
Okay, he was I met him once, I believe.
Yeah. He's a great guy. Yeah. And he's a conservative Christian with an accurate view of Islam. Such people do exist.
Yeah, he goes into the Semitic languages, yeah, and defines really what the word Allah, how it's there, Muslim, is that the same?
Yeah, same guy. And basically what he found out is that the Quran is closer to real Christianity than most Christians' understanding of Christianity. Yeah. Why is that? Well, it's because if you actually study the languages, you find out that the original Aramaic that Jesus spoke contains words that are cognates of the same terms that we find in Quran. So the Quranic message and Jesus' message, as best as it can be reconstructed through these Greek texts, which were translations from Aramaic, they're ultimately very similar. And Siljander recognized that. That's so important. And that actually vouches for the authenticity of both revelations.
Yeah. Didn't this also happen back in Rome? And you discussed this, Nero. Didn't he set up the Christians, and they were persecuted because there was an attack that he did. Can you elaborate on it? It was one of those...
false flag. It was one of history's first big false flags. Nero burned Rome and blamed the Christians. And we've had a couple of other of these big false flags aimed at religious groups, too. The other really big one that stands out is the gunpowder plot of 1604, I think it was. Guy Fawkes was a Catholic agitator who was set up as the patsy with a bunch of gunpowder, and you know, wet gunpowder in barrels. And he was placed beneath Parliament, and they arrested him and claimed that he was going to blow up the Parliament, kill all the top government people in England. And this message against Catholics went out to all the churches in the Church of England. And it was a lot like 9/11, except that instead of TV screens, this was preachers in churches screaming about the evil Catholic plot to blow up our government. And so this was the gunpowder plot was the false flag that launched the British Empire by whipping up hatred against Catholics and causing England to go to war basically permanently with Catholics, Spain, and Portugal, steal all of their colonies ultimately, and the British Empire was the result.
Now, what you're mentioning, the Nero, what I brought up, and then this, the gunpowder plot, we'll bring up some more. Are these established facts now? This is where historians or people have uncovered this. Anything, I'm going to be very skeptical because I'm sure there are some things that are very controversial, debatable. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about these, are these without a shadow of a doubt? Things like, let's bring up one, Northwoods.
Okay, yeah, well,
things that we can bring up, it's crystal clear. There's no arguing over it.
Nero burning Rome and blaming the Christians, I think that's pretty much majority opinion.
That's majority opinion. Yeah, okay.
Gunpowder Plot being a false flag, not so much, because that's the official myth of the British Empire, the official version, that the evil Catholic guy did it and was trying to blow up Parliament. So that hasn't fully been accepted by, but I think that more and more historians have seen that was a false
flag. What's something where 90% where it's, how about Northwoods?
Northwoods is pretty much a sure, well, we have the documents.
Yeah.
And the only reason we have these documents, which proved that the top level of the United States government and military were planning to basically attack America.
Yeah, tell us, for people who don't know, what Northwoods and the plot behind that.
Right. Well, this was in 1962, and the hardliners in the U.S. military were looking for an excuse to go to war with Cuba.
Yeah.
So the Joint Chiefs of Staff, America's highest military commanders, led by a man named General Lyman Lemnitzer, drafted a plan that would have involved sinking American ships and thus killing American sailors on the high seas. It would have involved bombing American cities and killing innocent American civilians. And it would have involved a fake airliner shootdown blamed on Fidel Castro. And all of this would have led to a U.S. invasion of Cuba. But President Kennedy and his advisor Robert McNamara apparently said no to it. So that is, we know that existed because we have the official document. Somebody saved McNamara's copy, apparently. It was discovered by an Australian researcher in the 1990s after it was released under the JFK Official Records Act. And then it became very well known, interestingly, right about the time of 9/11.
What about Gulf of Tonkin?
Again, that's another, well, one thing everybody agrees on with the Gulf of Tonkin was that what really happened and what was reported were completely different. That was the supposed North Vietnamese attack on an American ship that launched the big American escalation in Vietnam. However, all historians today admit that there was no such attack. So the only question is what really happened. There was maybe a little bit of a skirmish with a North Vietnamese boat, and then there was the American boat was firing into the sea, basically. This was then reported as if it were a serious attack by the North Vietnamese. All historians agree that it wasn't.
Are there any other incidences that we're getting one story? It's like if you have someone now that you want to trust, but the person is coming out, you know, through their actions, untrustworthy. So mm-hmm. you find out they lied to you once. Mm-hmm. It's again, they lied to you. Do you just blindly accept everything he's telling, or you're going to be really skeptical? You follow me? You're not going to conjure up, okay, I'm not conjuring up some theories here, but I'm just asking questions. So another one, I think Pearl Harbor.
Right. That's one that's still debated.
That's debated. So if you want to get into that a little bit.
Well, just briefly, the argument is that Pearl Harbor, which turned American opinion around upside down and brought the U.S. into World War II, prior to Pearl Harbor, 80+% of the American people didn't want to get into World War II. And then there was a huge Japanese sneak attack out at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, that killed 2,000+ American sailors and gave us these amazing images of ships blowing up that looked a lot like 9/11. And the official version of that is that it was just a Japanese sneak attack. But the almost certain reality, which historians, maybe, you know, a third to a half of the historians probably would admit this, at least privately now, and the rest would be lying. this was orchestrated. There was an 8-point plan in the Roosevelt administration to force the Japanese to strike the first blow. And Robert Stinnett, in his book Day of Deceit, has shown quite conclusively, in my opinion, that the Americans knew exactly when and where the Japanese were coming, intentionally sent their aircraft carriers out to sea, because we needed those, they were militarily important, and left a bunch of mothballed battleships in the harbor with men on them as a target to be destroyed. So essentially the American side sacrificed 2,000 sailors to rouse American public opinion into this state of fury that would allow entrance into World War II.
Here's one for you. I think this is undebatable. It's proven. How about the invasion of Iraq based on a lie, and it's proven now. Nobody's going to debate this, right? That there was weapons of mass destruction. What about that one?
Even President Trump got a lot of mileage with that one, bashing George W. Bush and knocking him out of the presidential race. Everybody admits that there was no significant WMD. Now, there may have been some old mothball WMD that they've actually lied about and covered up, but that's a whole different kettle of fish here. And another one, the first Iraq War, the Gulf War, first Gulf War, was sold to Congress thanks to this bizarre lie in which a public relations firm called Hill & Knowlton, which is close to the Bush family, produced the Kuwaiti ambassador's daughter, and she posed as a nurse, Nurse Nusaira, from a Kuwaiti hospital. She went on television and in front of Congress and told us that the evil Iraqi soldiers had been grabbing poor, innocent Kuwaiti babies from their incubators in the hospital where she worked and bashing their brains out on the floor. That was the story that enraged American public opinion and sold that war to Congress. And, of course, it wasn't really a Kuwaiti nurse. It was the ambassador's daughter. People started saying, wait a minute, isn't that the ambassador's daughter? And so it was exposed fairly quickly, and yet no, but they didn't tell everybody that.
We see a lot of fake things around us. You have, fake food, okay? You have a lot of this thing I talk about a lot now, you know, nutrition, because you have a lot of fake food. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of fake stories, people mm-hmm. making up, conjuring things. Botox, fake this, fake that, you know. And then why is this hard to believe that, you know, these, because there's also reports that came out not too long ago of the Pentagon paying over $500 million to a PR firm to create fake terrorist videos.
Right. I saw that. That was one of these dozens and dozens and dozens of false flag stories that we report on over at False Flag Weekly News. And that's also well documented. That's not one that anybody's arguing didn't happen. So the idea that terrorism is being used clandestinely, and even the spectacle of terrorism, when maybe there isn't even real terrorism in some cases, is being used to manipulate public opinion, it really should be a no-brainer. But because we're just pummeled incessantly with the mainstream version of things, people have been brainwashed into being afraid to even go there.
I mean, I have to admit, in every, you know, bag of apples, you got some rotten ones. You do have some lunatics that, you know, might attribute themselves to being Muslim, you know, but anyone I like who's sincerely practicing Islam and sees what it stands for, these are the things that really agitate and aggravate you when you know really what Islam is about, and then you have to keep defending it against these things that potentially don't have even if all the Muslims were doing drinking alcohol, for instance, or eating pork, or being unjust. Islam calls to be just. Islam calls to stay away from evil. So you can't blame Islam, is right? As that good example, you probably know, if the drunk driver crashes the Mercedes-Benz, you can't blame the manufacturer, right, for the drunk driver.
Right.
But now we're going above and beyond, and we're saying, hold on, many truth seekers out there who are going down these rabbit holes are saying, like, hold on, there's even more here, right? When you start to uncover the history, and we see that in previous times certain things have been uncovered, then this thing, $500 million on a PR firm, fake videos, terrorists, I mean, to do what? What's that all about?
Well, it's even worse than that, Eddie. I mean, that was one example. But isn't it bizarre that the public relations agency that handles ISIS videos is run by Rita Katz, the Israeli intelligence agent? It's called Site Intelligence Group, SITE, and it's a Mossad spinoff. So it's basically an Israeli operation, and yet we're told that essentially every ISIS video that is released goes through Site Intelligence Group. Now, many of these have been proven fake, you know, over and over and over. In fact, recently we discovered that one of the worst supposed Muslim terrorists in the whole world, a guy named Australia Witness, supposedly operated online, turned out to be none other than Joshua Goldberg.
The suspect, rather, that federal investigators stopped from carrying out a terror plot here in Kansas City.
This was published in the Sydney Morning Herald, and they have been tracking this guy online, Joshua Goldberg.
A young Jewish man operating out of his basement in Florida who's been impersonating evil Muslim terrorists and evil white supremacists and people like that all over the world. Just like this new guy in Israel, Kadar, that was just arrested.
An Israeli teenager has faced court accused of targeting Victorian schools with hoax bomb and shooting threats. He's alleged to have made more than 2,000 calls as part of a worldwide campaign to spread fear and alarm.
Michael Kadar is accused of spreading terror across the globe.
For thousands and thousands of threats against Jewish community centers was actually a Jewish Israeli kid, a young man, whose uncle was a high-up guy in Israeli black operations intelligence. So we've seen so many of these cases. But one of the things that really aggravates me the most is that they blame this on radical Islam, on supposedly the more pious the Muslim, the more dangerous. Yeah. And this is the exact opposite of the truth. Even if we accepted the official story of, let's say, 9/11, then these guys were not pious. The people that were told were the 19 hijackers. There may have been some identity theft there, I don't know. But they were, their behavior was the least Islamic that you could ever imagine. And then that same pattern repeats itself over and over and over. In so many of these cases, the patsies who are blamed for these supposed radical Islamic attacks are people with radically un-Islamic lifestyles. There's stories you can't believe. The mastermind of the Paris attacks in November 2015 was in a car. They were all drinking and smoking big joints, and they got pulled over as they were fleeing the scene of the crime, heading to Belgium, I think it was, and the cops just let them go and waved them on. And so what we're seeing in these cases over and over is that these patsies, the supposed radical Muslims who were set up to take the blame for these things, are marginal characters. They're kind of low-life characters, often from Muslim backgrounds, but very rarely serious Muslims. And they get involved with organized crime, drug trafficking, the corrupt side of the police establishment, the intelligence establishment. They get manipulated and they get set up.
I think now we're going to take a break, but we can get past the ad hominem attacks. Many people will start, attacking the person who wants to bring up questions. But I think now we've proved something that, okay, if we can't trust this person, whoever's bringing these claims, we've shown some examples through history, and then we gave the big example of the just outright lie of, that Bush with the whole weapons of mass destruction, which over 2 million innocent people over a span of 10 years were killed. We should have a right to ask some very important questions without being labeled, whatever label. I think, is that a fair assumption? It's common sense. And we have some of the top 6 whys that have to do with what we're talking about. Because that was a catalyst, this evil event that Islam condemns, Muslims condemn, 9/11. And we're going to be asking the 6 whys with our special guest here, Dr. Kevin, when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Back here with Dr. Kevin Barrett. The whys now. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. Why are over 2,500, these are not just laymen, these are people who specialize in architecture, engineers, scientists, mathematicians, professionals. Why are they demanding? These are not just people hanging out in the basement and they're drinking, smoking weed, and they're like, hey, I don't believe this official story. What's going on? We want a new one. No, these are people, the scientists, professionals who deal with buildings and, explosives or the sciences in this area. They are demanding a new investigation. Why is that?
That's right. It's 2,500 architects and engineers, and then there are a lot, many, many, many more scientists
on top of the
2,500. So it's actually more than that. Wow. And the reason that virtually everybody with any technical expertise who's looked at what happened in New York on September 11th, 2001, is a strong skeptic of the official version is that what we were told happened cannot have happened unless the laws of physics were suspended. Now, as Muslims, we will admit that there is such a thing as miracles, that's in our tradition. But the idea that these buildings would be demolished miraculously with the laws of physics suspended seems highly unlikely. And so all of these hard-nosed architects, engineers, and then these other scientists are all saying actually, if you sit them down privately, they'll tell you that the official story is not just false, it's preposterous.
The next why is the third building. Mm-hmm. Why did it just fall at free fall speed? It was one of those that someone who looks at the tapes, did it even get hit?
Mm-hmm. No, this was Building 7, which that was the highest security building in New York. It was the CIA's second biggest headquarters in the world. And it also had the SEC investigations of Enron, all sorts of really serious secret type stuff. And that was also the command center on the 23rd floor that was supposed to deal with any emergency in New York. So Building 7, this 47-story building, on the afternoon of 9/11, just boom, just committed suicide. That's the official story. Just disappeared in 6.5 seconds, straight into its own footprint, in an absolutely classic controlled demolition, maybe the most beautiful controlled demolition ever. The professionals in this area, like Danny Jawinko, the leading European demolition professional, was in awe at the job that these professionals had done on Building 7. When he first was shown this, he didn't know it would happen on 9/11. He said, wow, that's an amazing demolition. These professionals have done a great job. And they said, it was 9/11. He said, really? That happened on 9/11? And remember, most people still haven't seen much of this. They banned footage of Building 7 coming down from the major American networks for many years, for I believe 7-8 years, until they finally were allowed to show it in 2007-2008, because this so-called collapse of a building never hit by any planes. It was far away from the towers. There were lots of buildings that barely sustained any damage, much closer to the towers than Building 7 was. And it took the government years and years and years to come up with some ludicrous pretext for what happened to it. So Building 7 is in a lot of ways the Achilles heel of 9/11. There's really essentially nobody on Earth that's looked seriously at it that believes that official story.
What if someone comes back and says, look, that's only 2,500 architects and engineers. Compare that to actually how many architects and engineers are out there that aren't.
Yes, but why aren't people coming forward? Well, it's not great for your career to do that. I'm living proof. You know, I was on a career track in the academy. You know, I had the best offer out of my PhD program of anybody in the history of the program.
Wow.
At University of California, and I turned it down, maybe stupidly, I don't know. But I my career got blown up for talking about this. And basically everybody knows.
That's your free speech, huh?
There you go. Yeah, the land of freedom. Somebody hates our freedoms. I don't think it's the Muslims. But so these architects and engineers don't go there. Most of them don't go there. The 2,500 are the people who are honest and courageous, and they don't care if it's going to bring them a tax and career damage. But the others all know if they look at it. The Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth has been going to the Architects Convention every year and trying to get them to pass a resolution calling for a real investigation of what happened to Building 7. And they're not having a whole lot of luck. I think they got like 7%, and the next year they got 20%. This year they went back to 7%. And the reasons for that were partly they weren't given enough time to make their case. But when they went and talked to people who were voting against it, nobody said that the government is right about Building 7. Nobody said that. They all say, oh, well, this is going to cause our association problems. This happened a long time ago. Let's just let sleeping dogs lie, and so on and so forth. So that's the reason that other professionals don't take it up. It has nothing to do with the truth about what happened. Anyone who looks seriously at it knows the truth, which is that it was a controlled demolition.
That's interesting. If you ended up getting fired, I mean, you see a lot of Islamophobes, and many people come out and they start really like going at it with the whole free speech and express. But as soon as you express yourself and you ask questions, you lose your job.
Yeah, that's right. It's
a huge double standard.
Well, it's
hypocrisy.
It is, and there's a contradiction really in the heart of this sort of Western glorification of freedom, which is that you have the freedom to stick with that ideology, and you can talk about freedom all you want, but if you start really using it to critique the dominant way that power wants you to see things, then you get in trouble. Like the Charlie Hebdo thing in France was a classic example. Remember that? Where they said these radical Islamic terrorists shot up this cartoon magazine, and that turned out to be another false flag. I have a book about that here. It's called We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, and features a lot of very prominent people, including Rabbi Michael Lerner, America's most famous politically active liberal Jew. Is in the book, not necessarily agreeing with the false flag interpretation, but agreeing that there's a problem with this whole way propaganda behind this event. Mm-hmm. And that Charlie Hebdo thing was all about liberté, freedom, right? This is the West's official ideology. These cartoonists should be free to blaspheme and to say horrible, disgusting, obscene things. That's freedom. Well, as soon as you question what really happened there at Charlie Hebdo, and you should question it because there's video absolute proof that what they claim happened couldn't possibly have happened, then you discover the limits of this liberté or freedom that they're talking about. And it's a very sneaky Orwellian way of, you know, using words to mean the opposite of what they really mean. So unfreedom is really what these people are devoted to, but they want you to lock your mind down yourself. They don't want to have to threaten to throw you in prison. They would rather that you lock up your own brain. If they can train you to lock up your own brain, then they don't have to spend the money and the resources on coming and dragging you off and throwing you in a prison cell.
Well, this is a rabbit hole that I hadn't gone down. Uh-huh. I looked into, because I want to really be objective, really looking at things, you know, from taking an analytic approach, scientific, seeing like, okay, not coming to try to prove, you know, that, okay, this is, you know, a setup or whatnot. But then you just can't help. For instance, there's some questions that many were asking, and I was repeating them because they were important, with the San Bernardino. Mm-hmm. When the witnesses, and that was one that I kind of looked into because I wanted to do a show about it. Again, usually coming on and saying this has nothing to do with Islam. The guys, mm-hmm. it's Ramadan. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to, what do you do when you break iftar?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
when we're about to eat. That's
yeah,
at like
you
four
out
in the morning.
To the gay bar.
He, yeah, he's at a homosexual bar. He's drinking. He's doing everything like these, these 19 guys, strip clubs, this and that, and everything against Islam. Mm-hmm. But now the witnesses were saying that they saw multiple witnesses, three white men.
You're certain that you saw three men?
Yes. But the reason they believe that there are three individuals is because witnesses told police that they saw three men with what appeared to be long rifles leaving that scene. And they're now looking for a black SUV right now, Brooke.
From what I understand, there was three shooters that went in.
Tall white men. But over here, the official story is this a small young lady.
That's San Bernardino, yeah.
That's San Bernardino, right?
Yeah.
You know, you went obviously.
Yeah. That's what this book is about.
So you got another book on that one too.
Yeah, this is the it's called Orlando False Flag.
Can you tell me about the three white men? Did you hear the witnesses?
Yeah. Multiple witnesses. Three sets of witnesses all saw that the real shooters in San Bernardino were, that wasn't this couple that they blamed with that short little 5 foot tall 100-pound Muslim lady. It was three large white paramilitaries that did that shooting.
Ms. Abdel-Magee, can you describe to me in as much detail as you can, what did the gunman look like?
I couldn't see his face. He had a black hat on, and from my view, all I could see was just a black hat and black long sleeve shirt, possibly gloves on. He had black cargo pants on, the kind with the zippers on the sides and the big puffy pockets. He had a huge assault rifle, and he had extra ammo. He's coming ready for something to reload. I don't know. He had like magazines. I couldn't see what else I saw. I just saw three dressed exactly the same.
You're certain that you saw three men?
Yes. It looks like their skin color was white. They looked like they were athletic built, and they appeared to be tall.
You're certain that you saw three men?
Yes. It looks like their skin color was white. They looked like they were athletic built, and they appeared to be tall.
Where I was at right here, we seen there were three white men in military fatigues. Taking off.
What were they driving?
It was a black Impala, SUV, or yeah.
You think that they might have been the shooters?
Yeah. The way they were driving, yeah. Yeah.
And how many shots did you hear?
Oh, a lot. It was a lot. It sounded like, like I said, it sounded like a gun range, just shots going off like crazy. It was a lot. A lot of shots.
What's your first name?
Juan.
Juan, what's your last?
Hernandez.
All right. Thank you so much, sir.
And it just doesn't make sense for these two to be able to act like some kind of Bonnie and Clyde or something. It's just ridiculous. It doesn't add up.
And that's not just one person that said it. Three different witnesses all said that. They were recorded. You can watch them say it on YouTube. And that the same sort of thing has happened elsewhere. For instance, the Paris November 2015 attacks, which I also have a book out on, and had the same situation where witnesses said that the people who shot up the Bellekeep nightclub were actually large white paramilitaries. Maybe they're the same ones in San Bernardino. I don't know. But they didn't match the description of the Muslim patsies at all. So, yeah, we see this pattern over and over. And somehow we're bullied into not talking about it.
Yeah. Wow. Again, if this was done by someone who claimed to be Muslim, again, Islam condemns actions like this. This has nothing to do with Islam. But we're going a step further and saying that, hold on, the evidence is showing that this is not like the next question of the wise is, why the architects and engineers are questioning why was there this this namothermite found in a dust sample. So they're asking why. Why would there be this? What is namothermite?
Well, namothermite is a mixture. It's a chemical compound with aluminum that it reacts, turns steel into iron, melts it, and so it reacts at very high temperatures. And it could be used to create something that would slice through the steel columns to bring a building down. Because if you want a tall building to come down in any way other than sort of toppling slowly sideways, you know, which would be what would normally happen if you had an earthquake or whatever, a fire or something. Of course, fire can't knock down tall buildings, but if it could. In any case, nanothermite can slice columns, and so it could be used in sort of cutter charges that would slice columns. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that the dust samples on 9/11 show not only this remains of nanothermite chips, but also iron-rich microspheres, which would be what happens when the iron gets kind of blown up by these cutter charges. The steel gets blown into iron, and it's sprayed out as a sort of an aerosol spray, and the little tiny bits of molten iron coalesce as spheres. Mm-hmm. As they go through the air, that turns them into spheres. So tons of that. I mean, a huge, actually a very puzzlingly large component of the World Trade Center dust that was tested by Niels Herod, a chemistry professor at University of Copenhagen, and Stephen Jones, the physics professor from Brigham Young, and many others, showed a lot of that stuff in the dust. So it's actually, Eddie, the real mystery is, assuming these samples are authentic, and there's no strong reason to believe that they aren't, the question would be, how can there be that much, especially of the iron-rich microspheres? It's as if a tremendous amount of energy was unleashed to melt and sort of explode, both melt and explode simultaneously, very high, a shockingly large amount of the steel in the World Trade Center structure, almost more than you would expect if it was just cutter charges. So even Niels Herod is a little bit puzzled why it's all there. But there's no way to interpret it innocently. So there are really only two possibilities. Either somebody has salted those dust samples, which is very unlikely. The government has dust samples. So if this weren't true, they could just bring out their samples and prove it was not true, but they haven't. So the other explanation is that these buildings were explosively demolished, which happens to be provable in many other ways as well.
They're also asking another one of the whys is, why was 163,000 tons of concrete pulverized?
Right. See, the amount of energy available from gravity as a building comes down, it's that you can quantify it, and you can figure out how much of it would be used to sort of break up the building as the slab on top falls on the next slab. And what we saw with these twin towers was a very sizable proportion of the concrete was blasted out, just blasted to smithereens in pyroclastic cloud formation. These are the kinds of sort of hot slurry clouds that come out of volcanoes. And so a tremendous amount of energy went into pulverizing this concrete. A sizable amount of the concrete dust that was found is like talcum powder, sub 100 micron units of concrete. So again, massive amounts of energy unleashed far beyond what you would get from gravity. And if you just look at the pictures of these twin towers collapsing, they're not collapsing, they're exploding. Look at it again. Boom. You know, you can see these gigantic 100-ton steel chunks of steel framing being blasted upwards and outwards to impale themselves on neighboring buildings. And it's happening in a perfect symmetry. It's symmetrical. This couldn't possibly happen from any form of natural collapse. The only way a building could possibly naturally collapse would be asymmetrically and progressively or slowly, bit by bit, chunk. But this was it's just gone straight down, perfect symmetry, obvious demolition.
Next one, and we're almost at the end of the six, was why were there witnesses reporting that they saw explosions? They saw and heard explosions.
The third explosion, the whole lobby collapsed on us.
You're kidding. What was it like?
Horrible.
It's like hell. You don't want to know.
The whole building just collapsed on us.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
That was the planet, probably?
Yeah, definitely secondary explosion.
We watched the first explosion.
He started running. Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, as if they had detonated. As if they were planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
Just like the last man out. Did you ever meet the last
Mayor? William Rodriguez is actually a friend of mine. He came to Islam in Malaysia.
And he ended up accepting Islam.
Yeah, he accepted Islam. Mashallah, Willie Rodriguez, the great hero of 9/11. He was presented in the mainstream media as the biggest hero of 9/11, who rescued all sorts of people. The guy with the only key. He was a janitor in the North Tower, and he had a key. The other couple of people with keys fled. He was the last guy with a key. He led the firemen up there, and they got people out. And he was the last guy out of the North Tower before it came down. He dived under a fire truck, and then they had to dig all the rubble away to pull him out from the fire truck. They got him out just a couple of minutes before the fire truck's tires popped from the heat. So he had a real brush with death, and that led him to accept Islam. But he joined the 9/11 Truth Movement years later, after the 9/11 Commission didn't want to hear what he had to say and then sealed his testimony. But he testified that the first explosion happened in the sub basements below the floor one, and he was on the first floor. And this happened before the plane hit. He felt the impact of the plane maybe 7-10 seconds later. But the first huge explosion happened from below, blasted up the floor. Many people were very seriously injured and killed in that explosion down below. It happened before the plane hit. So that's one of the most important parts of his testimony. And he's a great guy. If you ever have a chance, get him on your show.
You've had firemen. You had many officials who are questioning because they heard these explosions. Like they describe it as a controlled demolition. We're just asking questions. Can we ask questions?
Well, this is America, right? Actually, in a way, we're kind of examples of how America is supposed to work. There's supposed to be freedom above all freedom of religion, right? I mean, the people that fled to this continent were fleeing religious persecution in large part. So the First Amendment that ensures freedom of religion and freedom of speech stuck in there in the First Amendment. I mean, that's really what this country is about. We're supposed to have the freedom to think on our own, to come to our own conclusions, to investigate everything. And if, for example, we come up with a slightly different religious view from the majority, as you and I have, we are supposed to have the full right to not only do that, and it should be celebrated, right? And we can talk about that. And likewise, when these contested political events happen, we're supposed to be free to hash that out. And obviously 9/11 has led to a huge rollback of freedom as well as Islamophobia. So it's really an attack on the First Amendment and an attack on the ideas of the founding fathers of the United States. So, Muslims today, as Muslims, we can be real American patriots as well as Muslim patriots by just standing up for the truth, standing up for the right thing, and walking in the footsteps of the prophets. Peace to all of them. The prophets have had tough situations. It's been hard for them to tell the truth. They've been persecuted for telling the truth, and yet they stuck by the truth. That's a lot of what prophecy is about. So we're the community with the best preserved revelation from the prophets through the last prophet. Man, we have to be standing up for the truth, Eddie. If we're not, who will?
Absolutely. And if you ask questions and you get a legit answer, like for instance, the first question was, why are there 2,500 architects and engineers wanting a new official investigation? And then someone comes and says, okay, because these guys lost their job, they have nothing else to do, and they're the et cetera. You get, and then let's say it's something credible, or I'm just giving an example, or why did Building Trade Center come down? And then there's a scientific answer, something saying that, at the same time the planes hit, they were already getting ready to take it down, they were going to destroy it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So it just simultaneously happened, and it's proven it did. It's just coincidence, right? I'm just giving an example, but that's not the case, right?
Well, yeah, see.
The thermite, what's that? They were doing some experiments in one of the rooms, and then when it came down, these were just remnants of that.
Right.
So you see, but have you gotten for these whys? Have people gotten an answer for these?
That's a great question. And I'm not really an expert in science. My father was an engineer. If he learned German, he would have been a PhD engineer. And I grew up dealing with some of the stuff he did. And so I'm not completely, I'm not exactly your average humanities guy as far as completely ignoring science and engineering, but I am an expert in arguments. That's what we do in the humanities, we learn to argue, sort of like lawyers, except with a broader scope. And what I do is I look at the arguments. I did this back when I was a kid with the JFK assassination. Okay, here's one group that says, the president, the Zapruder film shows the president's head snapping backwards. He's hit from the front, And they say, here's Life magazine photos that published those frames in reverse to make it look like he was shot from the back. So I look at that. Okay, what does the other side say? The other side says that, oh, Life magazine just made an innocent mistake and reversed the order of the frames. And then the official story is that this magic bullet did an amazing trajectory to you know, hit these two guys in all these different parts of their bodies, turning around in midair and all this. So essentially, you look at the two sides of the argument and you say, well, which is the better argument? And it was obvious in the case of JFK, and I could see that when I was 16 years old. And with 9/11, it turns out to be the same kind of situation. And for people who want to look at both sides of this argument, see whether the debunkers, quote-unquote, say, and whether the advocates of the 9/11 truth movement say, a really good resource is the film, it's called September 11th, The New Pearl Harbor. It's by an Italian guy named Massimo Mazzucco. So if you were to feed that into a search engine, September 11th, The New Pearl Harbor, you find this series of films. It's, 6 hours altogether, but you can watch it bit by bit. And he carefully considers what the different sides say in these arguments. And, of course, he concludes, as I have, well, I think the evidence really speaks for itself. You don't have to be an expert in arguments to figure most of this out.
Most people who argue this, they haven't really looked at the evidence, have they?
Exactly, yeah. See, the way they can get away with this kind of thing is by scaring people away from taking a serious look at the evidence.
Yeah, that's amazing. And at the end, when you look at what this was a catalyst to, the motive behind, obviously, this doesn't benefit Islam. It doesn't benefit Muslims the least. This is not good for business, right? But is it good for business on the other end?
Well, no kidding.
I mean, if you look at Sherlock Holmes, we don't have to bring him into this, do we? Well, I mean, what's the motive? Who gets the benefit? Where does the money go?
Well, we even have this document that was issued exactly 1 year before 9/11 by Project for a New American Century, which is all of the hardline militaristic neoconservatives. And the document was called Rebuilding America's Defenses. And it basically said we need to do preemptive invasions of the Middle East, and we need to double our military budget. And to do this, it's not going to happen anytime soon without, and this is like a direct quote, some cataclysmic and catalyzing event, such as a new Pearl Harbor. So that was issued 1 year, almost to the date, before 9/11. And so we have evidence that this group of people who dominated the Bush administration, they were yearning for an event like 9/11 so they could double their military budget and they could launch these wars of aggression in the Middle East. And a lot of other people benefit as well. Of course, all the contractors, all the people who benefit from military money, which is all plundered from the American taxpayer, they made out like bandits. The people who want the government to be a tyranny that can totally control its citizens' minds and, you know, spy on them and everything, those people benefited. A long list of people benefited. The people who are basically committing a very aggressive invasion and occupation and ethnic cleansing of the Holy Land in Palestine, that is the hardline Zionists, benefited tremendously, probably more than anyone else. So there was a long list of these folks who benefited from this. And of all the people who didn't benefit or who lost, the single biggest group would be the Muslims, and especially the Muslim sort of anti-imperialists and anti-Zionists, the Muslims who were committed to trying to free the Muslim world and to develop the Muslim world and to have an autonomous Muslim world. And to do that, we would have to kick out the riba banks and corporations that dominate that part of the world, and we would have to make sure that the local people in the Muslim world have control of their own resources and benefit from their own resources, right? Those are the so-called anti-imperialist and anti-Zionist Muslims. I'm one of them. And we lost from 9/11. Life has been very hard for us since 9/11. So it's really obvious who won and who lost. So just from that, on that basis, I think, and the fact that every single major American war since the Mexican War in the 1840s has been launched by some kind of big public relations stunt, it doesn't take an expert to see that they should have to prove that it wasn't a false flag. We shouldn't have to prove that it was.
Now, is that where you just stay away from, because that'd be someone jumping into being a conspiracy theorist because he's trying to figure out how people conspired, because you have all these departments. Mm-hmm. So is that where you're just asking the questions, and are there some people because some people can't wrap their mind around how could everyone be in cahoots now? All these departments, everyone working together to have this unhatch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the first kinds of skeptical responses we get when we talk about this. Well, how many people could have worked together to do this, and wouldn't somebody have talked? There are a lot of possible answers to that. There are cases where huge numbers of people have worked on secret projects and nobody's talked. A classic example is the Manhattan Project. Tens of thousands of people knew classified stuff about that, and nobody talked. They built the nuclear bomb without spilling that secret. And Operation Northwoods, that was mentioned earlier, a plan to mass murder Americans in a fake series of terrorist attacks to launch a war on Cuba in 1962, was kept completely secret from 1962 until, by very bad luck for the bad guys, one document happened to be uncovered in the late 1990s. So there's another example where a very nefarious plot that would have involved huge numbers of people, and it was ready to go in a month, was kept completely secret for all of those decades. And one could cite many, many other examples, but the short version is, yes, they can keep secrets. And the other thing to point out is that, the people that did 9/11 probably thought they were doing the right thing. They have a particular view of the world, and they see themselves as serving the country in some cases, another country in other cases, and the world. I mean, there are people out there who very strongly believe that the only way to world peace is a one-world government, and that the best way to get a one-world government is to strengthen the big central institutions, the banks, corporations, and military that are strongest right now, which would be the West and U.S. and West. So by unleashing those forces and trying to go out and grab a world government, we'll be imposing world peace, and that's a wonderful, glorious project. That's one ideology. And then, of course, as you know, there are many people who don't like Islam. Islam is coming back. It's really going strong in the 80s and 90s. And there are people who honestly have this anti-Islam view. They're afraid of Islam. For many reasons, and the powerful people have really good reasons to be afraid of it. If Islam takes over, no more usury banking running the world. Mm-hmm. The New World Order bankster syndicate will be out of business. So there are a lot of powerful folks who clearly have a good reason to actually think 9/11 would be a good thing. So, of course, those people would do it in secret. And, John Cobb, the eminent theologian, wrote about this in the book I edited called 9/11 and the American Empire. I think he's the greatest American theologian today, and many, many people would agree with that. And he's in that book, 9/11 and the American Empire, saying it looks like an inside job and saying that the people that did it probably thought it was the right thing to do. And here's their argument.
A couple more questions. We're almost out of time. We'll have to curtail it in a few. Tell me about your experience that you had with some law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And when the meeting was over, they had a different respect for you after you kind of went over some things with some of the organization, FBI or whatnot. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. I was wondering about which one you meant, because I've run into interesting conversations with, like, Homeland Security and, INS and those people. Like, I've been to Iran 4 times now in the last 3 years. And so I always wonder what my greeting will be like when I get back. But the one you're talking about was when I was flying home from New York. I'd done a talk at a 9/11 Truth anniversary event on the anniversary of September 11th. So I was flying back home, and I was dozing at the gate. I felt a tap on my shoulder and looked up, and there were 3 FBI agents flashing their badges. I said, "Mr. Barrett, would you come with us? We just have a few questions for you." "What's this about?" So they drag me off to an interrogation room, and on the way, the guy says, "I've seen you on Fox News." "Oh, okay." Sits me down and starts out, pulls out a notebook and says, "Is this your notebook?" And I said, "Yeah, that's my notebook. I think I left that on the plane flying into New York." He says, "Why is there Arabic in it?" And I said, "Well, I grabbed that notebook to write my speech on the plane, but I got into a good conversation with a guy next to me, and I forgot the notebook. It's my old Arabic notebook. I learned Arabic, years ago." He says, "Could you read me some of the Arabic?" So I had to read some Arabic to him, and it was actually lousy Arabic because it was my second year, and I was trying to write an essay, second year Arabic student writing an essay. Anyway, so the long story short, this guy suddenly barks at me, "Are you a terrorist?" I said, "No, I'm trying to help you guys catch the real terrorists." Mm-hmm. And then they just relax, and "What do you think happened on 9/11? They all get out their pens and notebooks. And so I gave them a similar, spiel that I've just given you. Yeah. They wrote it all down very seriously. didn't look like they disagreed at all. And then when I left, the guys shook my hand in a very friendly way and wished me good luck getting my job back. So my take on that was that these New York-based FBI agents know pretty well that what I'm saying isn't some crazy un-American conspiracy theory. It's pretty much in line with the likely facts of the case.
What's your goal at the end? What would you like to see happen?
Well, in best of all possible worlds, by Allah, some high-level insider comes forward, or something happens that forces this issue, it forces the case open, and I think that process could really radically change things for the better. I think a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a bit like what happened in South Africa after the apartheid era, would be one way to go, and probably a good way. Get trade truth. If you give us truth, we'll give you leniency or even amnesty. Get that truth out, and I think that would end the current era of extreme Western and Zionist imperialist attacks on the world. We're looking at it right now. We're facing World War III with Russia, with China, with North Korea. Not to mention what's going on in Syria and the Middle East, and all of that is. Really, it's aggression coming out of our side here, And so we're sitting here in Chicago, USA. It's our responsibility to try to get our side to tone down before we blow up the world. And what better way to do that than to force them to admit to the American people and the people of the world that 9/11 wasn't done by radical evil Muslim evildoers. It was done by the folks who wanted to launch this aggressive war on the world. And the result of this, I think, would be the United States would turn towards peace. We would take that money that we're throwing away on the military for no good purpose right now and use it to rebuild our infrastructure and to save the environment, solve the world's environmental problems. And I think that the rest of the world is really ready for a multipolar, peaceful world and would be very happy if this happened and would go along with it. And then I think this would, last but not least, also force a reasonable settlement to the situation in occupied Palestine. So I think that we would have innumerable benefits. And, of course, the Dean of Islam would get a whole new look, a whole fresh perspective. People would say, wow, this is not what we were told. Tell us about Islam. And your audience would skyrocket.
Tell one more. Someone who's genuine, sincere, and they're looking to really find out what the purpose of life is, like you were, and they come to evaluate all the different religions, and they like, the concept in Islam of God, that you only worship the creator, not the creation, the belief in Jesus as a mighty messenger, and doing good deeds, and preparing for the day of judgment by being the best neighbor you can be, by being the best human being you can be, and this pure monotheism that's there. But now there's this propaganda out there. The hate machine is fueled, I think, over a quarter of $1 million annual business bashing Islam, and someone's affected with this whole thing of radical Islam, radical Muslims, Islam is the enemy. And without going into a whole spiel of all of the history we went into, how do you, in a short, and you don't get to spend much time with this person, how do you get them to drop a seat to think beyond what they've been programmed through the whole Hollywood, movie that's been created for them, and they bite on it? How do you get them out of that?
Well, of course, it depends who you're talking to. The first and most important thing is to see who you're talking to and kind of communicate on their level. But right now, I'm stuck talking to a bunch of conspiracy theorists, quote unquote, because, I've gone down these rabbit holes. And I'm writing interesting stuff. So people are reading my stuff and listening to my radio broadcasts. And so they're, the people I talk to are people who are more or less aware of these kinds of political issues, but often, they don't know much about Islam, or their spiritual side is different. So for those people, I do try to emphasize the spiritual depth of Islam. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that in Islam, we have the first two most sort of tangible names of God that really have a meaning, are Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim. And what that comes from the root for womb. and translate it as the, you know, compassionate, the merciful, whatever, the all compassionate, the all merciful. It has to do with the love, the loving mercy and loving compassion that is the kind of love a mother feels for her children. This is really interesting. So our vision of God actually is not the masculine vision of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, which is a, it's kind of an all-male reproduction fantasy. It's very mass. It's on one side, and it's missing another side of the divine. So I talk about this kind of thing to make people sort of rethink, because there are a lot of people out there now who realize that the Trinity, like most of the Christians I meet, don't get the Trinity. Most of the Christians I meet, or especially the more sort of high-end, you know, educated people, see that there is this kind of, you know, religion has been like too male, whatever, macho, patriarchal, they say. Well, maybe that's partly because of this God the Father metaphor, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe Islam is right. Maybe that's not the right metaphor. So this is the sort of thing I talk about to my audience. But if I were just sitting down sort of an ordinary person, I would hope that just by, you know, trying to be a good example, a good neighbor, an honest person, speaking the truth as I see it, friendly and relatively non-judgmental. You know, I don't want to be judging on my non-Muslim neighbors and friends too much for some of their things that I would like to see them ultimately change. But just actually, you know, be having friendly relations with non-Muslims and setting a good example. That's how Islam spread so fast across so much of the world, was by people being pious and decent and honorable and honest merchants. That's ultimately the bottom line thing we have to do, is to change ourselves. We can't change the world until we change ourselves.
Yeah, that's the Islam that people don't get to hear about, they don't get to see or read about, with all of the negative stereotypes, propaganda is out there. How can people get a hold of you? They want to invite you to a university to give a talk, to read some of your stuff. How can they get in contact with you?
Well, they can find me through my website, which is truthjihad.com. Remember, the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. So that's my idea. The time for bloodshed is over. The weapons are too big and nasty. You can't fight wars according to Islamic rules very well anymore. So we need to wage jihad of the tongue, speak truth to power. So that's the truth jihad concept. The website is truthjihad.com.
That's where people can get in contact with you, all your reading material.
You can pretty much find everything through that.
Thank you very much, Doc.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you very much. Now remember this important point. If all the Muslims were drinking alcohol, doing drugs, going to nightclubs, fornicating, gambling, will that mean Islam allowed it? No! Because Islam is clear on the issue. The same way, if a Muslim or a group of Muslims brings harm to an innocent human being or human beings, Islam condemns it. We condemn it. And Muslims, as you know by now, have become professional condemners. Evil acts like 9/11, which was a catalyst for the war on Islam, that doesn't have any justification in Islam, but has brought much havoc and harm to Muslims in Islam. We're the ones suffering the most from it. But now critical thinkers, scientists, architects, engineers are asking the six why questions, like what we discussed on the show, and more are coming out after investigating the issue. But why is there right to free speech, which is not a hate-filled, bigoted speech like what many of the Islamophobes use, that incites violence in many cases? But there are critical questions being asked. And people who ask them, like Dr. Kevin, are fired and can't get a job because they're being censored. Is that free speech? Hate-filled speech, which in many cases, like I said, incites violence, is okay, but critical questions, like the six questions that we covered today, the why questions, you lose your job, is that right? Let's talk about it. Respectfully, leave your thoughts in the comments below, and don't forget to subscribe. Much peace and love. Salams.